that frightened Vale terrified Shallan.
I will explain someday, Shallan said softly to Adolin. I promise, when I'm ready.
He squeezed her arm in reply. She didn't deserve him, his goodness, his love. That was the trap she'd found herself in. The more he trusted her, the worse she felt, and she didn't know how to get out. She couldn't get out.
Please, she whispered, save me.
Vale reluctantly emerged. She sat up, not pulling against Adolin any longer, and he seemed to understand, shifting his position in the seat. He had an uncanny ability to tell which of her was in control.
We're trying to help, Vale said to him.
And we think that this year has been good for Shallan, overall. But right now, it's probably better if we discuss another topic.
Sure,
Adolin said. Can we talk about the fact that Ile was more frightened of capture than death?
She didn't kill herself, Adolin, Vale said. We are reasonably certain she died from a pinprick of poison.
He sat up straight. So you're saying someone in our team did it? One of my soldiers? Or one of your agents? He paused. Or did you do it, Vale?
I didn't, Vale said. But would it have been so bad if I had? We both know she needed to die.
She was a defenseless woman.
And it's that different from what you did to Sadeus?
He was a soldier, Adolin said. That's what makes it different.
He glanced out the window.
Maybe. Father thinks I did something terrible, but I was right, Vale. I'm not going to let someone hide behind social propriety while threatening my family. I won't let them use my honor against me. And
stone falls.
I say things like that, and
it doesn't sound so different from killing Ile, Vale said.
Regardless, I didn't kill her. Shallan, having had a short breather, started to reemerge. Vale retreated, letting Shallan lean up against Adolin. He, though tense at first, let her do so. She rested her head on his chest, listening to his heartbeat, his life, pulsing within him like the thunder of a captive storm. Pattern seemed to sense the way that pulse calmed her, for he began humming from where he hung on the roof. She would tell Adolin everything, eventually. She'd told him some already, about her father and her mother and her life in Yakeved. But not the deepest things, the things she didn't even remember herself. How could she tell him things that were clouded in her own memory? She also hadn't told him about the ghost bloods. She wasn't certain she could share that secret, but could she try? Begin, at least? At Vale and Radiant's prompting, she searched for a way. After all, Dalinar kept saying that the next step was the most important one.
There's something you need to know, she said. Before you came in, Ile implied that if I took her captive, she would be killed. She knew the blow was coming. That's why I was suspicious of her death. She also said she didn't kill Thanadol, that it was another group called the Ghost Bloods. She thought the Ghost Bloods would send someone for her, which was why she was certain she'd die.
We've been hunting them. Ile was leading them.
No, dear. She was leading the Sons of Honor. The Ghost Bloods are a different group.
He scratched his head.
Are they the ones your brother Helleran belonged to? The one that attacked Amaram, right? And Kaladin killed Helleran without knowing who he was?
Those were the Skybreakers. They're not so secret any longer. They joined with the enemy.
Right. Radiance on the other team.
Those likely made sense to him, as he'd taken battlefield reports on them. The shadowy groups moving at night, on the other hand, were something he couldn't fight directly. Dealing with them was to be her job. She dug in her pocket as the carriage rolled over a particularly robust series of bumps. This path hadn't been graded or leveled, and though the carriage driver did his best to miss the larger rock buds, there was only so much he could do. "The ghost bloods," Shallan said, "are the people who tried to kill Jasnah, and me by extension, by sinking our ship."
"So they're on Odium's side," Adolin said.
"It's more complicated than that. Honestly, I'm not sure what they want, besides secrets. They were trying to get to Urothiru before Jasnah, but we beat them to it. Led them to it might have been more accurate. I'm not at all sure what they want those secrets for."
"Power," Adolin said.
That response, the same one she'd given to Ile, now seemed so simplistic. Marais and his inscrutable master, Iyatl, were deliberate, precise people. Perhaps they were merely seeking to glean leverage or wealth from the chaos of the end of the world. Shallan realized she would be disappointed to discover that their plans were so pedestrian. Any corpse robber on a battlefield could exploit the misfortune of others. Marais was a hunter. He didn't wait for opportunities. He went out and made them.
"What's that?" Adolin asked, nodding to the book in her hand.
"Before she died," Shallan said, "Ile gave me a hint that led me to search the room and find this."
"That's why you didn't want the guards to do it," he said. "Because one of them might be a spy or assassin."
"Storms!" "You might want to reassign your soldiers to boring, out-of-the-way posts for a season."
"These are some of my best men," Adolin complained. "Highly decorated. They just pulled off an extremely dangerous covert operation."
"So give them a rest at some quiet post," Shallan said. "Until we figure this out. I'll watch my agents. If I discover it's one of them, you can bring the men back." He sulked at the suggestion. He hated the idea of punishing a group of good men because one of them might be a spy. Adolin might claim he was different from his father, but in fact, they were two shades of the same paint. Often, two similar colors clashed worse than wildly different ones would. Shallan kicked the bag of notes and letters that Gaz had gathered, resting at their feet. "We'll give that to your father's scribes, but I'll look through this book personally."
"What's in it?" Adolin asked,
leaning to the side so he could see, but there were no pictures. "I haven't read the entire thing," Shallan said. "It seems to be ELA's attempts to piece together what the ghost bloods are planning. Like this page, a list of terms or names her spies had heard. She was trying to define what they were." Shallan moved her finger down the page. "Nalathis, Skadariel, Tal'Dane. Do you recognize any of those?"
"They sound like nonsense to me." "Nalathis might have something to do with Nalan, the Skybreaker Herald."
Ile had noticed the same connection, but indicated these names might be places. Ones she could not find in any atlas. Perhaps they were like Feverstone Keep, the place Dalinar had seen in his visions. Somewhere that had disappeared so long ago, no one remembered the name anymore. Circled several times on one page at the end of the list was the word Thaidakar, with the note, "He leads them, but who is he?" The name seems a title, much like Marais, but neither are in a language I know. Shallan was pretty sure she'd heard Marais use the name Thaidakar before.
"So, is this our new mission?" Adolin asked. "We find out what these ghost blood people are up to, and we stop them."
He took the palm-sized notebook from her and flipped through the pages.
"Maybe we should give this to Jasnah."
"We will," she said. "Eventually."
"All right."
He gave it back, then put his arm around her and pulled her close. But promise me that you, and I mean all of you, will avoid doing anything crazy until you talk to me.
Dear, she said, considering who you're talking to, anything I am prone to try will be, by definition, crazy. He smiled at that, but gave her another comforting hug. She settled into the nook between his arm and chest, though he was too muscly to make a good pillow. She continued reading, but it wasn't until an hour or so later that she realized, despite dancing around the topic with him, she hadn't revealed she was a member of the Ghost Bloods. They were likely to put Shallan in the middle of whatever they were up to. So far, despite telling herself she was spying on them, she'd basically achieved every goal they'd asked of her. That meant a crisis was coming, the inflection point, past which she could not continue down this duplicitous path. Keeping secrets from Adolin was eating at her from the inside, fueling formless, pushing it toward a reality. She needed a way out, to leave the Ghost Bloods, break ties. Otherwise, they'd get inside her head. And it was way too crowded in there already. I didn't kill Iole, though, Shallan thought. I was close to it, but I didn't. So I'm not theirs entirely. Moraes would want to speak to her about the mission, and about some other things she'd been doing for him, so she could bet on him visiting her soon. Maybe when he did, she would finally find the strength to break with the Ghost Bloods.
10. A single casualty.
A tin cage will cause the Fabril to diminish nearby attributes. A pain real, for example, can numb pain. Note that advanced designs of cages can use both steel and iron as well, changing the Fabril's polarity depending on which metals are pushed to touch the gemstone. Lectron Fabril Mechanics, presented by Navani Kolin to the Coalition of Monarchs, Urethiru, Yesavan, 1175.
Kaladin was feeling quite a bit better as they neared the Shattered Plains. A few hours flying through open sky and sunlight always left him feeling refreshed. Right now, the man who had crumpled before Moash in that burning building seemed an entirely different person. Syl flew up beside him as a ribbon of light. Kaladin's windrunners were lashing Dalinar and the others. All Kaladin had to do was fly at the head of them all and look confident.
I've spoken to Yunfa again, Syl said in his mind. He's here on the plains. I think he wants to talk to you.
Tell him to come up and see me then, Kaladin said. His voice was lost in the rushing wind, but Syl could catch it anyway. She flitted off, followed by a few windspren. From this distance, Kaladin could almost make out the pattern to the Shattered Plains, so he gave a hand signal and reduced to a single lashing. A short time later, two blue-white ribbons of light came zipping up toward him. He could somehow tell Syl from the other one. There was a specific shade to her, as familiar to him as his own face. The other light resolved into the shape of a tiny old man reclining on a small cloud as he flew beside Kaladin. The Spren, Yunfa, had first bonded to Vratim, a windrunner who had died a few months ago. At first, when they'd begun losing radiance in battle, Kaladin had worried it would cause him to lose the Spren as well. Syl, after all, had gone comatose many centuries ago when she'd lost her first radiant. Others, however, handled it differently. The majority, though grieved, seemed to want another bond soon, as it helped them move past the pain of loss. Kaladin didn't pretend to understand Spren psychology, but Yunfa had seemed to deal with the death of his radiant well, treating it as a battlefield loss of an ally, rather than the destruction of part of his own soul. Indeed, Yunfa appeared willing to bond another. So far, he hadn't, and for reasons Kaladin couldn't understand. And as far as Kaladin knew, he was the sole free honor spren among them.
He says, Syl told Kaladin in his mind, that he's still considering picking a new knight. He's narrowed it down to 5 possibilities.
Is Relaine one of them? Yunfa stood up on his cloud, his long beard whipping in the wind, though he had no real substance. Kaladin could read anger in his posture before Syl gave him the reply. She was acting as intermediary since the sound of the rushing wind was fairly loud, even at a single lashing.
No, Syl said. He is angry at your repeated suggestion he bond one of the enemies.
He won't find a potential Windrunner more capable or earnest.
He's acting mad, Syl said, but I do think he'll agree if you push him. He respects you and honors Brenlike hierarchy. The ones who have joined us did so against the will of the general body of their peers. They'll be looking for someone to be in charge.
All right, then. As your High Marshal and Superior Officer, Kaladin said, I forbid you to bond anyone else unless you try to work with Relaine first. The elderly Spren shook his fist at Kaladin. You have 2 choices, Yunfa, Kaladin said, not waiting for Syl. Obey me, or throw away all the work you've done to adapt to this realm. You need a bond or your mind will fade. I'm tired of waiting on your indecisiveness. The Spren glared at him. Will you follow orders? The Spren spoke.
He asks how long you'll give him, Syl explained.
10 days, Kaladin said, and that is generous. Yunfa said something, then sped away, becoming a ribbon of light. Syl pulled up alongside Kaladin's head.
He said, fine, before leaving, she said. I have little doubt he'll at least consider Relaine now. Yunfa doesn't want to go back to Shadesmar. He likes this realm too much.
Kaladin nodded and felt uplifted by the result. If this worked out, Relaine would be thrilled. Followed by the others, Kaladin swooped down toward Narok, their outpost at the center of the shattered plains. Navani's engineers were turning the entire plateau from ruins into a fortified base. A wall to the east, easily 6 feet wide at its foot, was being built, low and squat, against the storms, and a thinner wall wrapped the rest of the plateau, and lightning rods helped protect from the Everstorm. Kaladin alighted on top of the wall and surveyed the fort. The engineers had scraped away most of the old Parshendi buildings, preserving only the most ancient of the ruins for study. Supply dumps, barracks, and storm cisterns rose around them now. With the wall going right up to the chasm, and with collapsible bridges outside, this isolated plateau was quickly becoming impregnable from ordinary ground assault. Imagine if the Parshendi had known modern fortification techniques, Kaladin said to Syl as she blew past in the shape of tumbling leaves. A few strategic forts set up like this across the plains, and we'd never have broken them out.
As I recall, she replied, we didn't so much break them out as purposely fall into their trap and hope it wouldn't hurt too much.
Nearby, the other Windrunners, Lower Dalinar, some of the Edge Dancers, and Navani's wooden travel vehicle. That had been a good idea, although it was a little harder to keep the larger object in the air. The thing had 4 fins on it, like an arrow. They'd started with 2 wings, which Navani had thought would make the vehicle fly better, but which had made it pull upward uncontrollably once a Windrunner lashed it. He hopped down from his perch. Syl whirled in a long arc around the old pillar at this edge of the plateau. Tall, with steps along the outside, it had become a perfect scout nest. Relaine said it had been used in Parshendi ceremonies, but he hadn't known its original purpose. Much of these ruins, the remnants of a once grand city that had stood during the Shadow Days, baffled them. Perhaps the 2 heralds could explain the pillar. Had they walked here? Unfortunately, considering that one of them was full-on delusional, and the other dabbled in it now and then, he wasn't certain they'd be useful in this. He wanted to get to Urithiru as quickly as possible, before people had a chance to start talking to him again, trying, with forced laughs, to cheer him up. He walked over to Dalinar, who was taking a report from the battalion lord who commanded Narok. Oddly, Navani hadn't emerged from her vehicle yet. Perhaps she was lost in her research. Permission to take the first group back, sir, Kaladin said. I want to go clean up. A moment, High Marshal, Delinar said to Kaladin, scanning the written report. The battalion lord, a gruff fellow with an old blood tattoo, looked away pointedly. Though Delinar had never said he'd moved to written reports specifically to make his officers confront the idea of a man reading, Kaladin could see the showmanship in the way he held up the sheet and nodded to himself as he read. What happened to Brightness Eole is regrettable, Delinar said. See that her decision to take her own life is published. I authorize a full occupation of the war camps. See it done. Yes, Your Majesty, the battalion lord said. Delinar was a king now, officially recognized by the coalition of monarchs as ruler of Urethiru, a station separate from Yasna's queenship over Alethkar. In acknowledgement of this, Delinar had officially renounced any idea of being a High King over any other monarch. Delinar handed the sheet to the battalion lord, then nodded to Kaladin. They walked off from the others, then a little further, to a section of the base between two soul-cast grain shelters. The king didn't speak at first, but Kaladin knew this trick. It was an old disciplinary tactic. You left silence hanging in the air. That made your man begin explaining himself first. Well, Kaladin didn't bite. Delinar studied him, taking note of his burned and bloodied uniform. Finally, he spoke. I have multiple reports of you and your soldiers letting enemy fused go once you've wounded them. Kaladin relaxed immediately. That was what Delinar wanted to talk about. I think we're starting to reach a kind of understanding with them, sir, Kaladin said. The Heavenly Ones fight with honor. I let one of them go today. In turn, their leader, Leshwe, released one of my men instead of killing him. This isn't a game, son, Delinar said. This isn't about who gets first blood. We're literally fighting for the existence of our people. I know, Kaladin said quickly, but this can serve us. You've noticed already how they'll hold back and attack us one-on-one so long as we play by their rules. Considering how many more Heavenly Ones there are than Windrunners, I think we want to encourage this kind of encounter. Killing them is barely an inconvenience, as they'll be reborn. But each of ours they kill requires training an entirely new Windrunner. Getting back wounded for wounded favors us. You never did want to fight the Parshmen, Delinar said. Even when you first joined my army, you didn't want to be sent against the Parshendi. I didn't like the idea of killing people who showed us honor, sir. Does it strike you as odd to find it among them? Delinar asked. The Almighty, honor himself, was our god. The one their god killed. I used to think it odd, but sir, wasn't honor their god before he was ours? That was one of the revelations that had shaken the foundation of the Radiance, both ancient and new. Many of the Orders had accepted the truth as an oddity and moved on. Many Windrunners had not. Nor had Delinar. Kaladin could see the way he winced whenever the idea was discussed. This world had belonged to the Singers with honor as their god, until humans had arrived, bringing odium. All of this highlights a bigger problem, Delinar said. This war is increasingly being fought in the skies. Navani's flying transport will only escalate the situation. We need more honor spren and Windrunners. Kaladin looked to where Syl hung in the air beside him. Delinar fixed his gaze on her a moment later, so she must have decided to reveal herself to him.
I'm sorry, she said softly. My relatives can be difficult.
They have to see that we're fighting for the survival of Roshar as much as for the survival of the Alethi, Delinar said. We can't do that without their help.
To my cousins, you are dangerous, Syl said. As dangerous as the Singers. The betrayal of the Knights Radiant killed so many of them.
The other Spren have begun coming around, Kaladin said. They see it.
Honor Spren are more rigid, she said. Most of them, at least.
She shrugged and looked to the side as if ashamed. Human gestures from her were so common these days that Kaladin barely paused to notice them. We need to do something, Dalinar said. It's been 8 months without a new honor spren coming to us. He eyed Kaladin. But that's a problem I suppose I'll continue to contemplate. For now, I'm worried about the way the Heavenly Ones and the Windrunners are interacting. It smacks of neither of you giving this your all. And I can't have soldiers on the battlefield that I worry won't be able to fight when the pressure mounts. Kaladin felt cold as he met Dalinar's eyes. So, this conversation was about Kaladin after all. What had happened to him? Again. Kaladin, Dalinar said, you're one of the best soldiers I've ever had the privilege of leading. You fight with passion and dedication. You single-handedly built up what has become the most important wing of my military, and did all this while living through the worst nightmare I could imagine. You are an inspiration to everyone who meets you. Thank you, sir. Dalinar nodded, then put his hand on Kaladin's shoulder. It's time that I relieved you of duty, son. I'm sorry. A jolt went through Kaladin, like the shock of being stabbed or the feeling of suddenly coming awake in an unfamiliar place, frightened by a sudden noise. A visceral clenching of the stomach, a sudden racing of the heart. Every piece of you alert, looking for the fight. No, he whispered. Sir, I know how it seems. How does it seem? Dalinar asked. Diagnose yourself, Kaladin. Tell me what you see. Kaladin closed his eyes. No. Dalinar gripped his shoulder tighter. I'm no surgeon, but I can tell you what I see. A soldier who has been on the front lines for far, far too long. A man who has survived so many horrors he now finds himself staring at nothing, his mind going numb so he doesn't have to remember. I see a soldier who can't sleep, who snaps at those who love him. He's a soldier who pretends he can still function. But he can't. He knows it. Kaladin knocked Dalinar's hand away, snapping open his eyes. You can't do this. I built the Windrunners. They're my team. You can't take them from me. I will because I have to, Dalinar said. Kaladin, if you were anyone else, I'd have pulled you from active duty months ago. But you're you, and I kept telling myself we needed every Windrunner. That's true. We need every functional Windrunner. I'm sorry. There was a point where if I'd removed you from command, it would have destroyed the momentum of the entire team. We're safely past that now. You will still be with us, but you won't be going on any more missions. A growling sound escaped Kaladin's throat, one a piece of him refused to believe he was making. He sucked in stormlight. He would not be beaten down again. He would not let some light-eyed blowhard take everything from him again. I can't believe this, Kaladin said, anger spren pooling underneath him. You were supposed to be different. You— Why? Dalinar asked, standing calmly. Why what? Kaladin snapped. Why am I different? Because you don't throw us away, Kaladin shouted. Because you— Because you care about your men. Kaladin deflated. He suddenly felt small. A child standing before a stern parent. He wavered, putting his back to the nearest building. Syl hung beside him, looking concerned, confused. She didn't speak up to contradict Dalinar. Why didn't she stick up for Kaladin? He glanced to the side. He'd brought most of what had been Bridge 4 with him. The Windrunners he'd left to protect the airship had once been Bridge 13 and their squires. So he saw a lot of friendly faces standing in the distant Narok courtyard. Rock and Teft, Renarin, Sigzil, Lynn, Lopin, Leighton and Pete, Scar and Dre, Lauron, newly forged as a full Radiant. None had yet spoken the fourth ideal. He liked to think that it was as hard for them as it was for him, and none had yet cracked it. But could they be restraining themselves because of him, out of some misguided respect? He turned back to Dalinar. What if I'm not there? He pled, one final complaint. What if something happens when they're out fighting? What if one of them dies because I couldn't protect them?
Kaladin, Dalinar said softly. What if something happens because you are with them? What if one of them dies because they expect your help, but you freeze again?
Kaladin breathed in sharply. He turned aside and squeezed his eyes shut, feeling tears leak out.
What if... Storms. Dalinar was right. He was right.
He
whispered. What were the words? You couldn't say the words, he thought. You needed to, a year ago when Dalinar could have died. You needed to speak the words. You crumpled instead.
Kaladin would never say them, would he? He was finished at the third ideal. Other Spren had said that many Radiants never spoke the later oaths. Kaladin took a deep breath and forced his eyes open.
What do I do now?
You aren't being demoted, Dalinar said firmly. I want you training, teaching, and helping us fight this war. Don't be ashamed, son. You fought well. You survived things no man should have to. That sort of experience leaves scars, same as any wound. It's all right to admit to them.
Kaladin brushed his fingers at his forehead and the scars he still bore. Unhealed, despite all of his powers, years after he'd been branded. Dalinar cleared his throat, seeming uncomfortable. Perhaps upon remembering Kaladin's wound, he thought the mention of scars to be in poor taste. It wasn't. The metaphor was particularly sound.
Can I keep my oaths without fighting? Kaladin asked. I need to protect.
There are many ways to protect, Dalinar said. Not all Radiants went into battle in the old days. I myself have found many ways to serve this war without swinging a blade on the front lines.
Kaladin looked to Syl, who nodded. Yes, he could keep his oaths this way.
You won't be the first celebrated soldier who has moved to a support position after seeing one too many friends die, Dalinar said to Kaladin. God beyond willing, we'll persuade the Honor Spren to work with us. And then we'll need to train flocks of new Windrunners. You'll be of great use overseeing Radiant training either way.
I just won't be anywhere I can cause harm, Kaladin whispered. Because I'm broken.
Dalinar took him by the shoulder once more, then raised his other hand, holding up a finger, as if to force Kaladin to focus on it.
This, Dalinar said, is what war does to all of us. It chews us up and spits us out mangled. There's no dishonor in taking a step away to recover. No more than there's dishonor in giving yourself time to heal from a stab wound.
So I'll come back to battle? Kaladin asked. I'll take a leave, then return?
If we feel it's right for you to do so. Yes, that's possible.
Possible, Kaladin thought, but not likely.
Dalinar had probably seen more men succumb to battle fatigue than Kaladin had, but in all his years of fighting, Kaladin had never seen someone recover. It didn't seem the kind of thing you got over.
If only he'd been stronger. Why hadn't he said the words?
We'll find a way to make this a smooth, natural transition, Dalinar promised him. We can introduce it to the others in whatever way you'd like.
That said, we're also not going to delay. This isn't a request, Kaladin. It's an order. From now on, you stay out of battle.
Yes, sir, Kaladin said.
Dalinar squeezed his shoulder.
You're not valuable to me because of how many enemies you can kill. It's because you're man enough to understand and to say words like those.
He nodded, letting go.
This is not a disciplinary action, Kaladin. I'll have new orders for you tomorrow. You can trust that I will put you to work. We will explain to everyone else that it's a promotion.
Kaladin forced out a smile, and that seemed to relieve Dalinar. Had to keep on a good face, had to look strong.
Don't let him know.
Sir, Kaladin said,
I'm not sure I'll be able to take a post-training other Radiance. Being with the Windrunners, sending them off to die without me? Well, sir, it would rip me apart. I don't think I could see them fly and not join them.
I hadn't considered that, Dalinar frowned. If you'd rather request another duty, I will allow it. Perhaps in logistics or battle planning, or maybe as an ambassador to the Thalanaw or Aesir. Your reputation would put you in high esteem there. At any rate, I won't have someone like you sitting around growing creme. You're too valuable.
Sure, of course. Take me from the one thing that matters, then tell me I'm valuable. We both know I'm nothing.
Kaladin fought against those thoughts and forced out another smile. I'll think about it, sir. I might need time to decide what I want, though.
Very well, Dalinar said. You have 10 days. Before then, I want you to report to me your decision.
Kaladin nodded. He put on another smile, which had the intended effect of convincing Dalinar not to worry. The man walked over to the other Windrunners. Kaladin looked away, feeling his stomach twist. His friends laughed and joked with one another in high spirits. So far as they knew, the Windrunners hadn't lost any members today. They didn't know the truth, that they'd taken a single, profound casualty. His name had been Kaladin Stormblessed.
Folio, Contemporary Singer Fashion. This folio page, produced in occupied Kolinar, depicts a warform Malin and a nimbleform Femalin. These versions of traditional Aletic clothing show the singers embracing novel fashions and blending them with Alethi sensibilities.
11. Passion and Courage. An iron cage will create an attractor, a fabrial that draws specific elements to itself. A properly created smoke fabrial, for example, can gather the smoke of a fire and hold it close. New discoveries lead us to believe it is possible to create a repeller fabrial, but we don't yet know the metal to use to achieve this feat. Lecture on Fabrial Mechanics, presented by Navani Kolin, to the Coalition of Monarchs, Urethiru, Yesevan, 1175.
Quickly! Up the stairs!
Venli shouted the words to the rhythm of command.
The lady returns!
The servants scrambled up the tower steps. They didn't need Venli to order them about, but it was expected of her, and she'd gotten very good at playing the role. She didn't whip them as some might. Most of the Shanae'im disliked such physical punishments, fortunately. But she did grab Vod out of line and straighten his shirt and sash. He hummed to appreciation in thanks as she shoved him after the rest. Last in line, Venli grabbed her scepter and hurried up the steps. The others ahead of her wore work form or nimble form, so she towered over them in envoy form. There were a variety of different levels a person could have in the singer culture. Normal people, simply called singers, or common singers, had ordinary forms, such as work form or war form. Then there were forms of power, like Venli's envoy form. This was a level higher in authority and strength, and required taking a voidspren into your gem heart. That influenced your mind, changed how you perceived the world. These singers were called regals. Further up the hierarchy were the fused, ancient souls put into a modern body, which extinguished the soul of the host completely. And above them? Mysterious creatures like the Thunderclasts and the Unmade, souls more like Spren than people. Venli still didn't know much about them. Serving one of the fused was difficult enough. She hurried up the steps, which wound dizzily around the spire. This wasn't a proper fortification. It was no more than a column of stone with wooden steps, basically a staircase into the sky. The design reminded her of the tall stone pillar in Narok. At the top of the spire, She entered a room that gave her vertigo. Open on two sides, the room looked out over the grand city of Kolinor, and there were no railings to prevent a careless worker from toppling 100 feet to the city streets below. Though the footing was sound, it felt unstable, like a tower of blocks with a too large capstone awaiting the inevitable child's foot. The storms should have destroyed these tower rooms on first blow, but the fused had overseen their construction, and so far, only one in the line of 20 had been felled by a high storm and needed to be rebuilt. That one had caused heavy damage to the homes below, of course, but there was little use seeking logic in the ways of the fused. Venli stepped to the front of the group of servants, sweating from the protracted climb. Her form of power was slender and tall, with long orange-red hair strands and delicate carapace along the cheeks and in ridges on the backs of the hands. Not armor, more like ornamentation. It wasn't a fighting form, more intended to inspire awe and give her powers to translate text and languages. Though she was a regal, she held a secret deep within her gem heart. A friend who protected her from the Voidspren's influence. Her radiant spren, Timber, buzzed softly, comforting her. Venli scanned the horizon and finally picked out figures approaching as dots in the sky. Though Venli had rushed the others, none would complain. You didn't question a regal. And besides, they'd rather be shouted at by Venli than suffer punishment from a fused. Leshwe was fair, but that did not mean her anger was tame. Soon the Shanaim, those ones of the heavens, came streaking into the city. Only the most important of them merited tower rooms like this one, and so the majority swooped down toward more conventional housing in the city proper. Leshwe, however, was among Odium's elite. She wasn't the most powerful, but was lofty, compared even to most fused. Part of Leshwe's favor had to do with her prowess in battle, but Venli suspected an equal measure came because she'd maintained her sanity over the centuries. The same could not be said for many, though the heavenly ones had fared better than other kinds of fused. The 9 varieties were called brands in their own language, a word evoking the heat of a branding iron, though Venli had seen no such mark on their skin. Leshwe slowed as she approached, her traveling garb, bright white and red this time, rippling in the wind. It trailed a good 30 feet below and behind her, and she wore her hair loose. She reached her hands to the sides as she landed, and servants immediately came forward to unhook clasps and remove the longer parts of the train. Others brought water and fruit, bowing as they held the bowls toward her. Leshwe waited for her garments to be unhooked before taking refreshment. She glanced at Venli, but made no sound, so Venli remained where she was, standing tall, holding her scepter. She had long since overcome her initial fears that she'd be found out for the fraud she was. Once the long train was removed, other servants helped Leshwe out of the robes. A few servants averted their eyes from the sight of her flowing undergarments, but Leshwe didn't care about mortal feelings of propriety. She didn't so much as hum a note of embarrassment, though in this incarnation, the body that had been offered to her was Malin. Indeed, after drinking and being wrapped in her robes of luxury, she sat down to be seen by the barber, who shaved her face after the manner of humans. She hated whiskers, even if the ones she grew when inhabiting a Malin body were soft and faint. The fused exerted some measure of will upon their forms. Skin patterns persisted, for example, and some grew carapace in individual patterns. Knowing that, you could easily distinguish the same fused across multiple incarnations. Of course, Venli had the advantage of her ability to look into Shadesmar, which immediately told her if someone was fused, regal, or ordinary singer. She tried very hard not to use that ability, except in the most secretive locations. It would be a disaster of incredible proportions if anyone figured out that Venli, last listener, envoy form regal, voice of Lady Leshwy, was a knight radiant. Sound thrummed through her. Timber could read her thoughts, and Venli could read the little spren's words and intents through the pulsing of her rhythms. In this case, Timber wanted Venli to acknowledge she was not a knight radiant. Not yet, as she'd only said the first ideal. She had work to do if she wanted to progress. She acknowledged this quietly. She grew uncomfortable if Timber pulsed when a fused was near. There was no telling what might give her away. Considering that, she pointedly did not look at Dull and Mazish among the servants. At least, not until they brought the new recruit forward. A young female in work form, bright lines of red marbling her otherwise black skin. Venli hummed to indifference, pretending to inspect the newcomer, whose name was Schumann, though they'd met several times in secret. Finally, Venli stepped up to Leshwy, who was still being shaved. Venli waited to be acknowledged, a sign given her when Leshwy hummed to satisfaction. "This one," Venli said, waving to Schumann, "has been determined worthy of service. Your storm setter needs a new assistant." The storm setter made certain Leshwy's possessions in the high chamber were packed before each storm, then reset afterward. Leshwy hummed. Though it was a short beat done to craving, it meant so much more to Venli. The longer she'd held envoy form, the more remarkable its abilities had become. She could not only speak all languages, she instinctively understood what her mistress said to her through simple humming. In fact, the experience was eerily familiar to the way she understood Timber, yet she was certain that ability wasn't related to her form. Regardless, as Leshwy's voice, Venli's duty was to express the lady's desires to others. "The lady wishes to know," Venli said to derision, "if this newcomer can embrace the height of the chamber." She pointed, and Schumann stepped nervously to the edge of the room, beside the drop-off. The chamber was large enough that, standing among the ladies' furniture at the center, one might be able to ignore how high they were. Venli strode over and joined Schumann. Here at the edge, there was no pretending or denying. With your toes to the rim, feeling the wind press you from behind as if to shove you off into the sky above the sunlit streets. Venli was not particularly afraid of heights, but part of her wanted to run to the center of the room and hug the floor. People were not meant to be this high. This was the domain of storm clouds and thunder, not singers. Schumann quaked, drawing some fear spren, but she stood firm. She stared outward, however, and did not look down. "Passion," Venli said softly, to determination. "One of the old rhythms, the pure rhythms of Roshar. Remember that with the fused, your passion will do you credit. To hold this post, you must match fear with determination." It was the great contradiction of serving the fused. They did not want simpering children who were too quick to obey, but they also expected exactness in service. They wanted only the strongest of wills among their followers, but wished to control and dominate them. Schumann hummed to the rhythm of winds, then looked down at the city. Venli made her stand an uncomfortable minute, then hummed and turned, walking back. Schumann followed with hasty steps, sweating visibly. "She seems timid," Leshwy said to Venli, speaking in their ancient language. "We are all timid when we begin," Venli replied. "She will serve well. How can one sing with passion if never given a chance to learn the proper songs?" Leshwe took the towel from her barber and wiped her face, then selected a fruit from the bowl offered nearby. She inspected it for flaws.
You are compassionate to them, despite your attempts to appear stiff and stern. I can see the truth in you, Venli, last listener.
If that were so, Venli thought, I would undoubtedly be dead by now.
I favor compassion, Leshwe said, so long as it does not override worthier passions.
She began eating her fruit, giving instruction in a quick hum. You are accepted, Venli said to Schumann.
Serve with devotion, and you will be taught to speak the words of the gods and sing the rhythms of lost peoples.
Schumann hummed her pleasure, backing away to join the others. Venli caught the eye of Dull, the storm setter, and he nodded before fetching the next item of business.
If I may, Venli said, turning to Leshwe. Did you kill him on this excursion?
There was no need to explain. Him. Leshwe was fascinated by the wind runners, and in particular their leader, the young man who had forged a group of radiants without the guidance of god or herald.
Leshwe finished her fruit before giving a reply. He was there, Leshwe said. And so was his spren, though she did not appear to me. We fought. No conclusion. Though I fear I might not have a chance to face him again.
Venli hummed to craving to indicate her curiosity.
He killed Lesion, the pursuer.
I do not know that name, Venli said. With that title, the creature must be one of the fused. As beings thousands of years old, each one had a lore and history long enough to fill books. It angered them that no one knew them individually this time around. Indeed, Leshwe spoke to derision when she replied,
You will. He is newly reawakened, but always worms his way into the stories and minds of mortals. He takes great pride in it.
And the rest of you don't? Venli kept the comment in. Leshwe appreciated passion, but wry comments were entirely different.
Is there other business for me? Leshwe asked.
One other matter, Venli said, gesturing as Dull arrived with a very frightened woman in tow. A human woman, thin and somewhat scrawny, with long curling eyebrows. She was dressed in the humble clothing of a worker.
You asked me to find a tailor who could experiment with new designs. This one was of that profession once. A human, Leshwe said. Curious.
You wished for the best, Venli said. Our people are learning to excel in many areas, but mastering some professions requires much longer than the year we've had. If you wish for an expert tailor, you will need a human.
Leshwe stood, then rose into the air, her robes of luxury, gold and stark black, trailing beneath her. She hummed a message to Venli.
The great lady wishes to know your name, Venli said.
Yokska, great one, said the cowering woman.
You were a tailor? Venli said, voicing for Leshwe.
Yes. Once I dressed princes and light eyes. I know the most current of fashions.
Your fashions and clothing will not suit a fused, Venli voiced. The designs will be unfamiliar to you.
I live to serve, Yokska said.
Venli glanced at Leshwe and knew immediately from the lady's hummed tone that this servant would be rejected. Was it the woman's mannerisms? Too cowering? Perhaps she didn't look presentable enough, though Venli had decided against dressing Yokska well, as that could offend the fused.
A human will not do,
Leshwe said. To elevate this one would be to say our people are not good enough. In any case, tell her to stand up and meet my eyes. So many of these are Kremlings. Can they be blamed? Other fused beat humans who meet their eyes. Leshwe hummed to fury, and Venli met the tone with her own. At this, Leshwe smiled. It is a problem among my kind, Leshwe admitted. The nine brands do not present uniform expectations of the humans. But still, this one cannot be my tailor. Already there are comments and questions about the raising of a human to the title of he who quiets. I would not heap up fuel for those seeking to prove we are soft. Save your hidden compassion for your own voice. But perhaps allow this one to teach a singer wearing art form, so they may learn her skill. Venli bowed her head, humming to subservience. She would have been pleased regardless of the outcome. This was mostly a test to see what her lady thought of the humans. Leshwe spoke so often of the wind runners. Venli was curious whether she would sympathize with a human of lower station. My tasks are done, Leshwe said. I will meditate. Empty the high chamber and see that the new servant is properly trained. She rose through a hole in the roof, seeking the clouds. Venli thumped her scepter against the wooden floor, and the other servants began to disperse down the steps. Several helped the human woman. Venli made Schumann wait. Once everyone was safely on their way, she led the newcomer down the long winding steps to her own room, the guard room that one needed to pass through to reach the steps. Venli's position was quite literally the gate one needed to pass in order to approach Leshwe. Dull waited beside the hatch that closed off access to the steps above. Schumann made as if to speak, but Venli quieted her, waiting until Dull closed the hatch and the window shades. Mazish returned from checking outside, then closed the door behind her. Dull and Mazish were married. Not once mates, as the listeners would have called it, but married. They had insisted after having their minds restored. They'd been mates while enslaved by the humans and had adopted Alethi ways. Venli had a great deal of work to do. She needed to counteract the indoctrination of the fused and help the singers cast off the traditions of those who had enslaved them. But a Kremling did not shed its shell until it had grown too large for it. She hoped her guidance would eventually encourage them to shed, of their own choice, the burdens of both fused and human society. You may speak now, Venli said to Schumann. Venli changed her rhythm to that of confidence, one of the old rhythms, the true rhythms, uncorrupted by the touch of odium. Storm, father, Schumann said, turning to Dull and Mazish. That was difficult. You didn't tell me she was going to practically dangle me off the edge.
We warned you it would be hard,
Dull said to reprimand. Well, I think I did pretty well otherwise, Schumann said, looking to Venli. Right? Brightness? What did you think? The change in the femalean's attitude made Venli sick. She was so human, from her curses to her way of gesturing when she spoke. But then, those who were most loyal to the fused were unlikely to join Venli. She would work with what she had. I worry you were overly timid, Venli said. The fused do not want weakness, and neither do I. Our organization is formed from those who are strong enough to resist and eventually break free of all chains. I'm ready, Schumann said. When do we attack the fused? Each storm I worry I'll be next, and that one of the waiting fused souls will boot my mind out and take over. It didn't work that way. Venli had witnessed the transformation. She'd nearly been taken herself. Accepting the soul of a fused into your body had an element of agency to it. Agency, however, was difficult to define. If you took a regal form, odium got inside your mind. New forms with their new rhythms altered your mannerisms, your way of seeing the world. Even common singers were carefully indoctrinated, constantly told that sacrificing themselves was a great privilege. This, in the end, was what made Venli decide she needed to try to rebuild her people. The fused and the humans, there was an equivalency to them. Both sought to take away the minds of common folk. Both were interested solely in the convenience of a useful body without the accompanying burden of a personality, desires, and dreams. Venli was determined not to do the same. She would accept those who came to her. If she wanted them to change, she would show them a better way. It was Timber's suggestion. Volition, agency, cardinal tenets of whatever it was she was becoming. Strange sentiments for one who had once, with a grin on her face, brought death and enslavement to her people. But so be it. She nodded to her friends, who backed away to watch the doors. Venli gestured for Schumann to sit down with her at the small table by the wall, away from the windows. Before she spoke, Venli checked for spies. She drew a bit of void light from a sphere in her pocket. She could use either of the two types of light, the strange void light Odium provided, or the old stormlight of honor. From what Timber said, this was new. Whatever Venli was doing, it hadn't been done before. Esh and I would have been excited by that idea. So Venli tried to take strength from memories of her sister. Using that light, she peeked into Shadesmar, the cognitive realm. Timber pulsed to concern. They'd tested Venli's other power, the ability to mold stone, only once, and it had drawn secret spren. A kind of specialized spren that flew through the city, watching for signs of knights radiant using their powers. She had escaped those secret spren without revealing herself, but it had been close. As long as the secret spren were near, Venli could not practice the full extent of her abilities. Fortunately, this power, the one that let her peek into Shadesmar, did not draw the same attention. With it, she saw a world overlapping the physical one. The second world was made up of an ocean of beads, a strange sun set too far back in a black sky, and hovering lights, one for every soul. The souls effused were dark flames that pulsed like a beating heart. With care, she'd also learned to judge which spren a common singer had bonded to provide their form. Some void spren could hide from the eyes of all except those they wanted to see them. But none could hide from Venli, who could see their traces in Shadesmar. She made certain none were nearby, and that Schumann was not one of the Mavsetim, fused who could imitate the shapes of others. Even other fused seemed wary of the Mavsetim, those ones of masks. Schumann's soul was as Venli expected, a common singer soul, bonded to a small gravitation spren to take work form. Venli stopped using her powers. She knew she could travel to that strange world if she wished, but Timber warned that the place was dangerous for mortals, and it was difficult to return once fully there. Today, looking was enough. "You must know what we are," Venli said to Schumann, "and what we are not. We do not seek to overthrow the fused, but we are not a rebellion," Venli said. "We are a group of objectors who do not like the choices we've been offered. Fused oppression? Or human tyranny? The god of hatred? or the supposedly honorable god who abandoned us to slavery? We accept neither. We are the listeners. We will cast off everything, including our very forms if we must, to find freedom. Once we have enough members, we will leave the city and travel someplace where no one will bother us. We will remain neutral in the conflicts between humans and fused. Our only goal is to find a place where we can thrive on our own. Our society, our government, our rules. But, Schumann said, they're not simply going to let us walk away, right? What safe place is there away from everyone else? They were good questions. Venli hummed to annoyance, at herself, not at Schumann. When her ancestors had first broken away in an ultimate act of bravery and sacrifice, it had been at the end of the wars between humans and singers. The listeners were able to escape in the confusion, a loose thread no one thought to tie up. This was different. She knew it was. She leaned forward. We have two current plans. The first is to find sympathetic fused and convince them we deserve this privilege. They respect passion and courage. Yeah, sure, but... Schumann shrugged in a human way. So casual. There's a big difference between respecting passion and letting someone curse you out. The fused seem pretty intolerant of people truly disagreeing with them. You're making a mistake, Venli said to reprimand. You assume the fused are all of a single mind. They're the immortal servants of a terrible god. And they're still people, each with different hearts, thoughts, and goals. I retain hope that some of them will see what we're planning as worthy. It was a frail hope, Venli admitted to herself. Timber pulsed within her, agreeing. Leshwe, though. The High Lady seemed to respect her enemies. She could be brutal, she could be unforgiving, but she could also be thoughtful. Leshwe said the conquest of Roshar was being undertaken on behalf of the common singer people. Perhaps using a similar language, Venli could present her plan for a new listener homeland. Unfortunately, she feared that the fused had fought their wars so long that, despite paying lip service to giving the world back to the singers, they no longer saw freedom as the goal. To many of them, the war was for vengeance, the destruction of their enemies, finally proving which side was right. So if Leshwe, who was among both the most sane and the most empathetic of fused, could not be persuaded, then that left only one option, to run and hide. Venli's ancestors had shown that courage. She was uncertain when being honest with herself, whether she had the same moral strength. Schumann idly played with her hair, rather than humming to an emotion as a listener would have. Was that hair twisting a sign she was bored? Perhaps the human way of humming to skepticism? If we must run, Venli said, we are not without resources. Forgive me if I'm hesitant, Brightness, Schumann said. They summoned rock monsters that were taller than the storming city wall. They have regals and fused. I think our sole hope is to get the entire city to turn against them. We have a regal as well, Venli said, gesturing to herself. There is a void spren in my gem heart, Schumann, but I have learned to contain and imprison it. It gives me powers, such as the ability to look into Shadesmar and see if any spren are nearby spying on us. Regal powers, Schumann said, glancing to the others in the room. And I could have them too? without surrendering my will to Odium?
Possibly, Venli said. Once I have perfected the process so others can use it.
Timber pulsed inside her, disapproving.
The little Spren wanted Venli to tell the full truth, that she was radiant. However, the time wasn't right. Venli wanted to be certain she could offer others what she had before exposing what she was. She needed to be certain other Spren like Timber were willing, and she needed to prepare her friends for the path.
Long ago, Venli explained to Schumann, the singers were allies of the Spren. Then humans came, and the wars started. The events of those days are lost to all but the fused. In the end, however, we know the Spren chose humans. Eventually, the humans betrayed them, killed them. Some Spren have chosen to give humans a second chance, but others... Well, I have been contacted by a Spren who represents an entire people in Shadesmar. They realize that perhaps we deserve a second chance more than humans do.
What does that mean? Schumann asked.
That we will not be completely without allies once we make our move, Venli said. Our ultimate goal is to find a place where we can escape other people's rules and their laws. A place where we can be what we wish and cast off the roles forced upon us.
I'm in, Schumann said. That sounds like a storming delight, Brightness. Maybe if we have forms of power that aren't granted by Odium, the enemy will leave us alone.
Either that, or Odium would see that his minions scoured Venli and her faction from the planet.
Timber pulsed, saying no great work could be accomplished without risk.
Venli hated when she said things like that. It reminded her exactly how dangerous her current actions were. She drew in a little light to check Shadesmar again. She saw nothing spying on her, so...
A dark, pulsing flame was moving down from above.
Leshwe. Venli leaped to her feet, her chair slamming to the ground. Dull and Mazish noticed her urgency and stood upright, searching around, trying to decide what to do.
Open the shades, Venli said. Quickly, so she doesn't see anything odd.
They slammed the windows open right as the hatch rattled. Lady Leshwe, brilliant in her outfit of gold and black, entered, skimming above the steps.
She almost never came down here.
What was going on? Timber trembled inside Venli.
They'd been discovered. It had to mean they'd...
Gather yourself, last listener, Leshwe said to the rhythm of agony. Something is happening. Something dangerous. I fear the war is about to take a distinctly different turn.
12. A Way to Help.
One of my pleas is for Artifabrians to stop shrouding Fabrial techniques with so much mystery. Many decoy materials are used in cages, and wires are often plated to look like a different metal with the express intent of confusing those who might try to learn the process through personal study. This might enrich the Artifabrian, but it impoverishes us all. Lectron Fabrial Mechanics, presented by Navani Colin to the Coalition of Monarchs, Urethiru, Yesavan, 1175.
As they arrived at Urethiru, Kaladin wanted nothing more than to vanish, to go someplace where he wouldn't have to listen to everyone laughing. There were 100 of them together, mostly squires of the various Windrunners who had once been his team. Kaladin didn't have many squires left, none, unless you counted Dabid and Relaine. Rock didn't have a Spren either, but he had moved on to something else. Kaladin wasn't sure what it was, but he didn't call himself a squire. Verlaine would soon have a spren, and would finally be able to move on too. Dabbit had gone on the mission today to help Renarin deliver water and supplies to the townspeople. He'd never recovered from his battle shock, however, and didn't have radiant powers. He wasn't so much a squire as someone Kaladin and the others looked after. The rest had all ascended to at least the second ideal. That made them more than a squire, but not yet a full radiant, having bonded a spren, but not yet having earned a blade. They were all so jovial as they walked together across the Oathgate Plateau, and Kaladin didn't begrudge them their mirth. They were dear to him, and he wanted them to laugh. Yet at the moment, he couldn't imagine anything more painful than the way they all tried to cheer him up. They sensed his mood, though he hadn't spoken to them regarding his relegation, his retirement. Storms, it made him sick to think about it. As they walked, Lopin told him a particularly bad joke. Scar asked him for a sparring session, which was his way of offering help. Normally, Kaladin would have agreed, but today, sparring would remind him of what he'd lost. Sigzil, showing admirable restraint, told him that battle reports could wait until tomorrow. Storms, how bad did he look? Kaladin did his best to deflect them all, pasting on a smile so wide it felt like it cracked his skin. Rock kept his distance, carefully ignoring Kaladin. Rock generally did have a better sense of his true mood than most. And Rock could see Syl, who, fretful as she buzzed around Kaladin, eventually zipped off. She caught a current nearby, flying into the air. She found flight as reassuring as he did. I need to be careful not to let this break her, he thought. Keep up a strong front for her, for all of them. They shouldn't have to be in pain because of how I feel. He could do this gracefully. He could fight this one last battle. They crossed the open field of stone before the Tower City. Kaladin almost managed to keep walking without staring up at the tower. He nearly didn't feel a shock of dissociation at its immensity. He spent only a split second in disbelief that something so grand could exist. Yes, these days the tower was practically mundane. Hey, Layton said as they reached the tower entrance. Rock, got any stew for us maybe, for old time's sake? Kaladin turned. The word stew pierced the cloud.
Ah, coming up to the beautifully thin air makes you suddenly think straight, Rock said. You remember the glories of good cooking. But this thing cannot be today. I have appointment.
It's not with the surgeons, is it? Kara called. Because I don't think they can do anything about your breath, Rock.
Ha!
Rock said, then bellowed a laugh, going so far as to wipe a tear from his eye. Kara grinned, but then Rock held out his hand.
No, no. You think I am laughing at what you said? Ersic, I'm laughing because you thought that to be funny joke, Kara. Ha, ha!
Kaladin smiled, a real smile for a moment. Then they started to break apart into small clusters, usually a knight with their squad of squires. His friends all had their own teams now. Even Teft was pulled away by one of the groups, though his squires had been in Bridge 13, and they had stayed behind to guard the ship. In fact, many of them had become Radiants themselves. Kaladin wasn't certain how many squires Teft had left. Could Kaladin do as Delanor wanted? Could he stand being High Marshal of the Windrunners without going into the field? Being a part of their lives, but not being able to help them, fight alongside them? No. A clean break would be better. A few groups invited him to go with them, but he found himself turning them down. He stood tall, like a commander should, and gave them the nod. The captain's nod that said, "You run along, soldier. I have important things to be about and cannot be bothered with frivolity." Nobody pushed him, though he wished that one of them would. But these days they had their own lives. Many had families. All had duties. Those who had served with him in the early days still wore their Bridge 4 patches with pride, but Bridge 4 was something they used to belong to. A legendary team already passed into myth. Kaladin kept his back straight, his chin high, as he left them and strode through the now familiar corridors of the Tower City. Lined with entrancing patterns of different shades of strata, the tower had sphere lanterns lining most major hallways, locked, of course, but changed regularly. The place was starting to feel truly lived in. He passed families, workers, and refugees, people of all walks, as varied as a goblet full of spheres. They saluted him, or stepped aside for him, or, in the case of many children, waved to him. The High Marshal, Kaladin Stormblessed. He kept on the proper face all the way to his rooms, and was proud of himself for it. Then he stepped inside, and found an empty nothingness. His were the quarters of a High Lord, supposedly luxurious and spacious. He had little furniture, though, and that left it feeling hollow, dark, the sole light coming from the balcony. Every honor he'd been given seemed to highlight how vacant his life really was. Titles couldn't fill a room with life. Still, he turned and closed the door with a firm push. Only then did he break. He didn't make it to the chair. He sank down with his back to the wall beside the door. He tried to unbutton his coat, but ended up bending forward with his knuckles pressing his forehead, digging into his skin as he hyperventilated, gasping in deep breaths of air while he trembled and shook. Exhaustion spread like jets of dust gleefully congregated around him, and agony spread like upside-down faces carved from stone, twisted and faded in and out. He couldn't cry. Nothing came out. He wanted to cry, because at least that would be a release. Instead, he huddled, knuckles pressing against the scars in his forehead, wishing he could shrivel away, like the eyes of a person struck by a sharp blade. In moments like this, alone and huddled on the floor of a dark room, tormented by agony spren, Moash's words found him. The truth of them became undeniable. Out in the garish sunlight, it was easy to pretend that everything was all right. In here, Kaladin could see clearly. "You're just going to keep hurting." His entire life had been a futile effort to stop a storm by yelling at it. The storm didn't care. "They're all going to die. There's nothing you can do about it. You could never build anything that lasted, so why try? Everything decayed and fell apart. Nothing was permanent, not even love. Only one way out." A knock came at his door. Kaladin ignored the sound until it became insistent. Storms. They were going to barge in, weren't they? Suddenly panicked that anyone should find him like this, Kaladin stood up and straightened his coat. He took a deep breath, and the agony spren faded. Adolin pushed his way in, a treasonous Syl on his shoulder. That was where she had gone? To fetch Adolin Storming Colin? The young man wore a uniform of Colin blue, but not a regulation one. He'd taken to having embellishments added, regardless of what his father thought. While it was sturdy, a little stiff, starched to maintain neat lines, its sleeves were embroidered to match his boots. The cut left the coat longer than most, a bit like Kaladin's own captain's coat, but more trendy. Somehow, Adolin wore the uniform when the uniform had always worn Kaladin. To Kaladin, the uniform was a tool. To Adolin, it was a part of an ensemble. How did he get his hair, blonde, peppered black, so perfectly messy? It was both casual and deliberate at the same time. He was smiling, of course, storming man.
"You are here," Adolin said. "Rock said he thought you were heading for your room."
"Because I wanted to be alone," Kaladin said.
"You spend too many evenings alone, Bridge Boy,"
Adolin said, glancing at the nearby exhaustion spren, then grabbing Kaladin by the arm, something few other people would have dared.
I like being by myself, Kaladin said.
Great! Sounds awful. Today you're coming with me. No more excuses. I let you blow me away last week and the week before.
Maybe, Kaladin snapped. I just don't want to be around you, Adolin.
The High Prince hesitated, then leaned forward, narrowing his eyes and putting his face up close to Kaladin's. Syl still sat on Adolin's shoulder, her arms folded, without even the decency to look ashamed when Kaladin glared at her.
Tell me honestly, Adolin said, with an oath, Kaladin. Tell me that you should be left alone tonight. Swear it to me.
Adolin held his gaze. Kaladin tried to form the words and felt of the 10 fools when he couldn't get them out. He definitely shouldn't be alone right now.
Storm you, Kaladin said.
Ha! Adolin said, tugging him by the arm. Come on, Bright Lord Master High Marshal Stormface. Change your coat to one that doesn't smell like smoke, then come with me. You don't have to smile. You don't have to talk. But if you're going to be miserable, you might as well do it with friends.
Kaladin extracted his arm from Adolin's grip, but didn't resist further. He grabbed new clothes,